Fine Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
All right, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. It's a yeller Sunday morning. Man, I just got to say, there is, and I, you know, you may have heard me talk about yeller before. Golden yellow. It is the time of year. And I've been thinking more and more about it. I mean, there are so many, we talked about this last week, there's so many things that are yellow, and I can't get over it. And I've been thinking more and more about it. All these things are yellow. I mean, the sunflowers are yellow right now. The grasses are yellow. I can't tell you right now. I can't tell you how beautiful right now the Indian grass is. Just this beautiful yellow. The rudbeckias are yellow. What do you want to call them? Black-eyed Susans are yellow. The brown-eyed Susans are yellow. It is the goldenrod is unbelievably yellow. Do you know how many species of goldenrod there are right now blooming all around you, everywhere? No, they don't cause hay fever. Call me and ask me. I'll tell you why. You can look at them. You know they don't cause hay fever because they're yeller. They're bright. They catch your eye. There's a lot going on out there in yellow right now. And you just wonder, I just made this huge list of the number of species that are absolutely yellow right now that are blooming now, blooming earlier. Why is there so much yellow? It's like somebody got started on this thing and everybody said, oh, that's pretty cool. That's the fashion statement. Let's all do yellow. It's just weird. And in Alabama, I mean, yellow and gold is something just unbelievable. It's everywhere. It's just, I mean, you can't understand this landscape if you don't see yellow. You can't at all. It's just everywhere. That's interesting. So I'm thinking, okay, let's think about this. Why is there so much yellow? And I'm thinking, okay, well, so let's look at it from this perspective. It's about pollination, by the way. The fact that goldenrod is colorful is a good indication that it doesn't give you hay fever because it's colorful. It's designed to attract insects to pull the little heavy grains of pollen that are so heavy they'd fall right out of the flower if they can't even be carried on the wind and take them to another flower. So they can't give you hay fever, right? But they're just fully yellow. Why is this? So you think, okay, it's about attracting pollinators. Surely that's it. That's the simple answer. That's what it's about. And a whole lot of pollinators are attracted to yellow. Well, here's the problem. Most pollinators don't see yellow. Now, I want you to think about this. You didn't wake up this morning thinking, I want to know about yellow, but I want to know about yellow. And I want to know why it's yellow. And maybe there's something important there, and it ain't about the pollinators particularly, I don't think. And here's why most pollinators don't see yellow. What they see are ultraviolet and infrared tones that if you look into a sunflower, if you look into a rudbeckia, and you're a bug, and you're an insect, you don't see yellow. You're seeing all of these ultraviolet colors and infrared colors in patterns that we humans can't even see. So it's almost like the yellow, it don't matter to the insects. It ain't there for them. And yet, everything is yellow. What in the world is going on? I mean, if it's not about... And then I got to thinking, well, you know, why did they evolve yellow? Why was yellow such a popular color? No, it ain't about LSU. We've already talked about that. Why was yellow such a popular color? Because it hadn't long before LSU was around. maybe, and I'm thinking, you know, this is a bizarre thought, but maybe it's an important thought. Maybe the fact is that plants didn't evolve yellow so much as humans evolved to see things that are yellow. Now, this is weird. This is weird. But I'm beginning to think it may be true. Because I think there are a lot of higher order things that actually benefit from seeing yellow. That yellow is an important signal to us, not to the pollinators. And maybe we evolved to see certain things that are yellow. Now, I'm still constructing this, but stay with me. It's interesting. I mean, we are not every creature sees yellow. And there's got to be a benefit, maybe, to seeing yellow. I don't think it's just incidental. There's too much of it. Maybe we evolved to see yellow. Maybe that means that yellow is something special. Now, if you think that yellow being special means it's about, oh, well, we wanted to see gold everywhere. Well, if you think it's about a mineral, I think we would have I don't think we would have survived as humans. That's just it. It ain't about gold. It ain't about seeing gold. Our attraction to gold may be about our attraction to yellow. And maybe the attraction to yellow started first, and gold was just a way of sort of making permanent that yellow thing that we see so well and that a lot of creatures don't see well. Why would that be? You know, I got to think about it. Things like sunflowers, they're great food. They're wonderful food. Seeing a field of Indian grass says, this is incredibly good pasture. Seeing all those yellow flowers out there, and there aren't many of them that are dangerous. Unlike a lot of other plants, it's the yellow flowers say life. They say, this is a place of abundant life. And maybe we learn to recognize, to group certain plants based on this yellow thing because they meant this is an incredible place for life. Now, we've done everything we can to get rid of yellow. We do it every year. We mow our places into oblivion. We herbicide them. We bulldoze them. And the yellow still keeps coming back. Because there's so much of it. We lose yellow all the time. We lose beautiful yellows. We use life-giving yellows that are out there all the time. You know, I think we evolved to see yellow. And maybe it's important right now that you go out and look at the yellow. Look at the gold. Enjoy it. Because I think it means life to us. I think it means life is abundant here. And I think about those people. Just coming into Alabama for the first time. When did that happen? I don't know. We got these footprints that are 25,000 years old over there in Mexico. Did you see that? Kids jumping up and down in the sand 25,000 years ago. So maybe it was 20,000 years ago. They came over, you know, over this big rise out looking over September and October, and all the great yellow. And they said, you know, there's a lot of yellow here. This may be a great place for us to live. It's life, seeing all that yellow. It's life. Go out and see the yellow. It is so cool. There's some purple out there. There's some blues. They're fine. They're abundant, too. But, you know, they're not like the yellows. Not just everywhere, not everywhere, like the yellow is. It's just an amazing thing that we're seeing right now. And I think we see it because we're supposed to see it. I think we're seeing it because it helps us to see yellow. Time to celebrate yellow in your gardens. Time to celebrate yellow, even more importantly, in the fields of Alabama. Give us a call this morning. You got a plant that's yellow and you don't know what it is, you call me. Let's see if we can't figure it out. You got any plant? You can't figure it out. You call me. We'll try to figure it out. You got some problems in your yard. We'll talk about that. You know, I hate to harangue, but boy, this is the time. We got to start planting stuff out for winter. This is the time to make our food for winter. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back, Gulf Coast Sunday morning. You know, it's a funny thing. So, Jim, which Jim was that? I got to think. But Jim sent me a picture this morning of a golden orb weaver. More yeller. And it's interesting. We've been talking about yellow this morning, and you know, it's very interesting. If you're a spider and you want to trap things and you want to trap insects, which is mostly what you want to do, you probably don't want them to see your web, right? But golden orb weavers just are, they produce these beautiful golden threads. Now, that makes for a real pretty thing if you're a human and you're looking at that golden web, but it kind of defeats the purpose if you're a spider, huh? If everybody can see gold so well, I think the insects, they don't see that gold the way we see that gold. And maybe that gold in the spider web is there for us, is there for bigger creatures that are better at seeing yellow. Maybe it keeps us out of the golden orb weaver's hair, so to speak. That beautiful gold, this beautiful gold on the abdomen as well. It's interesting when you start looking at yellow and gold and you realize this is something humans see really well. And a lot of other creatures don't see it that well at all. It's bizarre, ain't it? So I got to think that, you know, when at some point when we decided to post these eyeballs on top of these tall shoulders, on top of these two upright legs, that about that time, maybe before that a little bit, we decided it was important to see yellow. And we kind of, our bodies trained us to see yellow better and better and better. We're really good at it. And there's probably a reason for that. And it's really cool because if you go out and look at the yellows, it ain't just one kind of yellow. It's multiple kinds of yellow. I mean, we're really good at discerning different types of yellow. I don't know if you've noticed that. Really cool. I think about that the other day with the silphiums. You think I'm going on about this yellow, don't you? But it's cool. I'm looking at these beautiful silphiums that are just moon color, just like a pale yellow moon on a beautiful full moon night. This pale yellow moon, just beautiful. And then there's the sunflowers right next to it, which are this deep, deep gold, so deep you can almost swim in it. It's just this beautiful, deep yellow gold. And then there's the oranges, which got a little bit of red in them, but still mostly yellow. And we see those pretty good, and we discern those pretty good. It's interesting that we see yellow and that it is maybe an advantage for humans. Sorry, got to think about it. It's really cool. Dan sent me a picture of a yellow. It reminds me that pollen is yellow, too. Which is crazy weird, because, again, the insects carrying the pollen, they don't see that yellow. They're seeing something else. Isn't that weird? But, on the other hand, Dan, by the way, you know what that plant is. Ludwigia. As in Ludwig von Beethoven. Not named for Beethoven, actually, but Ludwig. Ludwigia. One of many kinds of plants related to Oenothera, related to evening primroses, except these bloom during the day. We got a lot of species of Ludwigia out there in the Delta and other places. You know, I don't know which one. I don't know which species that is. I could look it up, but you hadn't asked me to, so I'm not going to look it up. I don't know which one. It's a Ludwigia. I got close enough, didn't I? Lots of other things. People are sending me in some pictures. Somebody said, Josh, I think, is sending me some pictures of trees. Josh, they have not gotten here. And a lot of questions we're going to harvest, talk about this morning. Beautiful, Beautiful. Those are white shrimp, aren't they? Absolutely beautiful. This is that season for white shrimp. Bruce, and they're beautiful. And we ought to talk about shrimp and how they all work and what's going to happen to our shrimp. EJ, are you still there? Thank you for holding on.
Yes, I'm still here.
Tell me what's going on.
Well, about 2 years ago, I had a mimosa tree cut down. I mean, it was getting really large, and it was starting to, leaves were starting to knock into the roof and stuff like that. Anyway, about a year later, and for the last 2 years, I get these, I guess wherever the root system is, little mimosas are coming up. And it's even over in my neighbor's yard. I'd like to know, how can I get rid of it?
Well, it may be coming up from seed. I haven't seen it sprout from roots that much. I do see it come up from seed pretty prolifically. That's one of the things that keeps mimosas really going, is that they produce a ton of seeds. And as long as they can hit the ground right, as long as the ground has got some bare soil, that those little seeds can work their way down into, they will sprout. And I suspect that's what's happening if it's happening far away from the stump. I will say, and I agree, that mimosas can be difficult to kill. I've tried. I like mimosas just fine. I kind of grew up with them. They're a moderate pest. They are a little bit invasive. They're not as destructive as a lot of things like tallow trees, but they can be in the wrong place, and they can be a little bit annoying at times. So here's what I'm going to say, EJ.
Okay.
Where the stump is, if the stump is still sprouting, where you had that original stump, is it still sprouting?
No. I had it grounded.
Yeah, okay.
So it's no stump at all.
And you're sure that these other little sprouts are coming up from the roots? I think they're probably coming up from seeds, aren't they?
Well, here's why I'm thinking they're coming from the roots, because I've never seen them until we cut the tree down. Prior to that, I didn't have issues with that. It wasn't until I cut the tree down.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not going to rule it out, but that's pretty unusual for it to sprout that far away from the roots. How far away from the roots are these things sprouting?
Well, let's see. If I think about where the stump is, I'm going to say 6 feet, 8 feet, 15 feet, 30 feet over into my neighbor's yard.
Yeah, it's the 30 feet that worries me. I could almost imagine it happening 6 feet, maybe. I don't see that often. But the 30 feet tells me, yeah, it's about seeds. And something just happened. I mean, maybe you got more sunlight that allowed these things to come up. Maybe there's more bare ground that got exposed recently. Maybe people changed the way they mowed the yard. And that sometimes can happen. But I'm pretty sure that those are seedlings and not root sprouts. And one way to tell, here's just one quick way to tell.
Okay.
It's as long as they're not too tall, you should be able to go over and pull those things out of the ground if the ground is moist. And you can tell if it's coming from a root sprout, you'll pull up a root that goes way away from the plant. If it's just a seedling, and if it's 12, 18 inches tall, 2 feet tall, you're not going to see roots going, big, thick roots going away from that plant. So I think it's just the seedlings, and I think it's, you know, so you can handle it by weeding and by mowing. But here's the thing, EJ. Things happen that I don't anticipate sometimes. I'll be honest. The world's a big place. Crazy things happen. I can't predict them. Do this for me. Go out and just tug on a few of those. See if you can't pull them out of the ground. The ground still ought to be pretty wet. See if you can't pull them out of the ground. And just tell me if you see a big cord-like root that may be about as big as your finger. Because it'd take a root that large to produce a sprout. As big as your little finger, at least.
Well, and if actually, you see a big just 2 days ago, I pulled one up, and it did have a piece of root on it that was about the width of a finger.
And did it go? Yeah. And did it go laterally back towards where that other tree was?
Oh well, now that I can't tell. I just pulled it, and it had broke off, and it was just pointing straight down. So I couldn't
straight
tell
down.
If it had
So that see that doesn't. That's just a root that the that plant had. I don't think that came. It would be a side root. It would be going very close to the surface, I think, if it were going to be sprouting like that. If you have, if there are any, so here's the other thing I can tell you. If there are any big plants and they have a relatively large stump, mm-hmm. when you pull it out, if the stump is as big around as your thumb or bigger, cut it off. And as soon as you cut it off, treat that stump with a little bit of Roundup, just a little bit of Roundup, just paint it on there. And then put a plastic wrap on top of that, just a little plastic baggie or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that should definitely translocate to the roots and help to kill the plant.
Okay. Well, actually, I was thinking about that, maybe taking a sponge with some Roundup and just wipe it really good.
But, yeah, but you want to do it on the exposed, where you freshly cut the trunk. That's the best way to do it. Otherwise, you'd have to get it on the leaves, which is kind of problematic. But I think they're all seedlings. I think they're all seedlings.
Okay. Well, usually when I mow the lawn, they go away. But about when it's time to cut the grass, they're about 12 inches tall.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that'll happen, but you're going to see less of them. We got to take a break.
Oh, okay.
EJ.
All right. Well, thanks for that information.
And listen, pull some up and see if you see any of those long lateral roots and call me back next week if you do, okay?
Okay, I can do that.
All right. All right, thank you. All right, folks, we're going to be back.
Everything I got is done and gone.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, so we got lots of questions to answer. Lots of fun things to think about. This yellow thing it's kind of catching on. Jim in Georgetown sent me an incredible picture of the sky, which had a lot of yellow in it this morning, but a lot of red, too. Is that true about red sky at morning? I don't know. I don't think there's a big storm coming up, is there? Beautiful sky. Yellow, it's this funny thing that we see so much yellow. There are people I know who don't like yellow. But maybe it's just because they see so much of it, and it worries them that they see so much of it. But I like yellow. I love seeing that yellow. If you've got it, here's the thing, and let me just give a little message about yellow. If you've got, you got one of those 5-acre domains, and you're out there mowing the whole thing, oh, man. You done missed it. You missed the yellow. Let the yellow happen. Let that yellow happen. Just let it happen. Because it's a good sign of life. All those goldenrods, they're going to be tons of goldenrods. You might see some rare goldenrods. Alabama has some incredible goldenrods. Just some incredible ones. And rare, I every now and then I stop to count the species in Alabama. It's got to be like, I think there's about 40 of them, if I remember correctly. I have to go back. It takes a while to count through all of them. But about 40, can you believe that? 40 different. And if you go and look, there's some big ones that are weedy that come up all the time, but they're beautiful too. I love them. Love them all. But there's a bunch of other kinds of goldenrods blooming. And then the sunflowers and then all the rest. The yellow is just absolutely, absolutely incredible, the yellow. Let me pick up on some things that that people have been asking about. Last week, somebody asked me, and I didn't answer, and I regret not answering. I hope you're still listening this week. Sweet potatoes. I got a bunch of sweet potatoes. I tried a bunch of sweet potatoes this year. I hope they're going to do well. I think they're going to do well. I got all different kinds. I got purple sweet potatoes. I got the old-fashioned, not-so-sweet sweet potatoes that are great for bacon. I got some of the sweetest orange ones that are really unusual. I got a bunch that I'm trialing, and we'll see how they do. I'm excited about all of them. If you don't know about all the variety of sweet potatoes, you call me. We ought to talk about that. But when do you know when to pick them? Pick them is the right wrong word, maybe. When do you know how to dig them? There you go. Because that's what they are. They're underground. Man, my vines have just, they are all over the place. And the nice thing about those sweet potatoes is once you get them started and you get it right, man, they just eat up. It's like a ground cover. It's nothing grows underneath them. It's really great. It's a great way to get rid of weeds, mostly. The Bermuda grass, it don't even know what to do under all that sweet potato. That's a nice thing. But how do I know when to, you know, There's a lot of rules for it. Some years I wait until the vines die down, and I always think that's a mistake. I think when the vine's beginning turning a little bit yellow, but certainly by this time of year, in South Alabama for sure, it's about time to pick them. And one thing you can do is go down and grapple them. You know how people grapple for catfish? You ever seen people grapple? You can't see what you're doing. It's underwater, and you stick your hand in a hole, and you grapple till you grab a catfish and pull them out. Well, you grapple for sweet potatoes. The nice thing about sweet potatoes is that they don't bite. You just kind of loosen the soil around the edges where you think those sweet potatoes might be growing. Put your hand in there and grapple around and see if they ain't ready. That is the best way I know to do it. I have let them go too long, and sometimes they just get too big. I grappled the other day. I grappled my sweet potatoes. I put my hand in the ground and I felt them. And they were just the right size. I'm excited. It's looking good. It's looking good. Josh, your picture came through. It is of a tree, and Josh says, well, it kind of looks like a pear or something, but it ain't a pear. Well, Josh, unfortunately, I have to say it is a pear. It's a feral pear, sort of like a feral pig or a feral dog. It is a domesticated Bradford Calariana kind of thing that's gone wild, and it's coming up everywhere in pastures. It can do real damage. It can really spread. Fire is very useful against them, I can tell you, but we don't burn enough, and so we're just creating another threat for ourselves. But that is a pear. It's a wild pear. I don't want you to think that it is a native pear. It is not. It is a pear that has gone feral, that has gone wild, that has escaped cultivation, and is now running rampant in the woods. Those are little baby bitty pears, kind of about how pears started before we started domesticating them to make them look big. This picture that Josh sent me has got these little pears. What, Josh, they're about the size of marbles, right? Nobody remembers what a marble looks like. My goodness, you don't even know what a marble is anymore, do you? What do I say? They're bigger than buckshot. You know, they're nice, about 1 inch across, almost perfectly round, not quite round, little bit oval. They're pears. They're miniature feral pears, and not something you want. Believe me, you don't want it. It is a mess. I take the only thing I can figure out for us to do with these pears, and I think it's a good thing that we'll never do it because it takes work, and you know how we are about that. So here's the thing. The pear wood is incredible for smoking my pizzas. It's So when I make a pizza, you know, I get little briquettes, but I also put some pear wood in there that's kind of dried out nice and gives it a nice, everybody loves it. It's really nice. Makes great charcoal. Your Bradford pear ain't useful for nothing except for roasting stuff. So I've got a Bradford pear that I torture. That's what I would recommend doing with that tree, torturing it to death, Josh. Yeah, about the size of a marble. We got it. Josh, we know what a we know what a marble is. Does anybody remember what marbles look like? You remember the last time you played with marbles? Yeah. So somebody sent me a picture of a citrus, which is catching my eye, and I'm looking at it and I'm gonna think about it real hard. I do see it looks like some citrus mite damage, looks like some bird damage, looks like I'm going to have to sort of sort through that, and I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about it really hard. But let me go back to this. My friend in Spring Hill would like to know what kind of oranges to plant. This is Abby. You know, Abby, the classic orange, and the way we really should start in Mobile is with Satsumas. And Owari Satsuma is the classic place to start. It is the place to start. Now, let me tell you, because I've been preaching this for 10 years, and I've been saying, folks, we got a citrus paradise. Please be careful. Please be careful. Please be careful. Please don't mess this up. Just we got to watch carefully to make sure what we're moving in and out. Don't buy your citrus from carefully registered places. Let's don't just buy them from any place. Well, here's the problem, Abby, and I'll be honest. We've introduced two really virulent citrus diseases. I don't know how bad they're going to be. They're going to be pretty bad. We may escape them, and we'll know more about that later. They're trying to quarantine them now. The question is, where are you going to be able to get citrus? Because we are under citrus quarantine. It's going to get harder and harder to find citrus. And I'm just being honest about it. And the reason is we messed it up. Yeah, sure. If anybody's got them for sale and they're certified, do not go to the flea market and buy your citrus. If you can find a reputable nursery that goes through inspections, Shore Acres is one. There's a bunch of others, of course. All of the stores that advertise on our show, they're all reputable. They're getting their citrus from reputable places. You can get them from those places. So Owari would be the one if you can find somebody who's selling Owari now. I'll tell you, I don't know how much more we're going to be able to do. I don't, beyond Satsumas, I am cautious. I think Meyer's lemons are great. I think Ponkans are great. They're going to be really hard to find anymore. If you can find the native Gulf Coast citrus, which are going to get harder and harder to find, like Louisiana Sweet, I think they are the best of the oranges for us. I don't think navels are quite as good here, but you can certainly grow navels, and they'll produce some years, and you might wait long enough for them to actually develop flavor. Usually they don't develop flavor till late, but like February, March. But I would not start there. I'd start with the Satsumas and kumquats. That's the place. Hey, we're Abby, hope that helped. We're going to be back.
And there's a backwards old town that's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right. Welcome back. Tony, you're not going to let me forget about that caterpillar, are you? You know, here's what I think. It's a Saturnid moth, one of the Saturn moss. I am not absolutely sure which one. It doesn't look like a typical Cecropia moth caterpillar. It doesn't look like Polyphemus. There's a bunch of them out there, and we got a bunch of them in the south. And oh, heavens to Betsy, we don't have good Well, there's some good sites, and I'm going to spend some time just because it's driving you crazy. And Tony, here's a challenge. Tony sent me a picture of a moth. Sent it to me last week. We talked about another Saturn moth. It was the moth itself, not the caterpillar, last week. But this time it's the caterpillar, and I got to find a moth to go with it. I can tell you that I'm almost certain that it's a Saturn moth. It almost looks like a hickory horned devil, which is a type of Saturn moth, and a really cool-looking caterpillar. I mean, it is. It's like you can't imagine. It's like Halloween on steroids. Incredible hickory horn devils, and it almost looks like, but it doesn't have those really long horns in front like the hickory horn devil does. So I gotta figure out which one it is, and I ain't sure. But I'm going to look it up. But, Tony, here's the thing. You beat me to it if you can. This is a challenge. Between now and next Sunday, one of us is going to come up with this answer. There's some great places to go looking on the web. Look for Saturn, S-A-T-U-R-N, moths, M-O-T-H-S. Saturn moth caterpillars. If you want to get real scientific about it, you can try to type in the Latin Saturnidae, S-A-T-U-R-N-I-I-D-A-E. Just look up. See, so that's where you're going to look up Saturn moths, right? And see if you can't find it. I'm going to be looking, too. We got a bunch of them. Yeah, Josh, there is such a thing. There it is. There's the hickory horn devil. Isn't that incredible? Did you send me that picture from somewhere else? Is that it? That's not in your yard, is it? So Dan sent me an incredible picture of a hickory horn devil. They are absolutely amazing, aren't they? You know, Dan, if that's in your yard, you ought to post it. If it's somebody else's picture, don't get us all in trouble by posting it. But it's cool. I mean, the hickory horn devils are really amazing. They are, if you've never seen one, it is one of life's great experiences. It's just amazing. But at any rate, there it is. Let's see what else we got here. We got, we got a caller. Let me, Bill, I'm listening. What's going on? You there?
Hello. Yes, sir.
I'm here.
So,
I'm listening.
In a couple of weeks to the Mobile Botanical Garden plant sale. Never been there before, but I was going to buy cauliflower plant and broccoli plant, but I needed to know how many should I buy. I've got two 4x12 raised beds. How many plants would fit those just right?
Well, first off, let me say that don't wait. You don't want to wait 2 weeks. Because you're going to need every day you can. And I don't think the Botanical Garden sale is until late October, if I remember correctly. Now, if they have plants for sale, if the Botanical Gardens has plants for sale in early October, that's fine. That first week of October, that's about the time to put them out. But you want to put those plants out right now. So cauliflower is... Cauliflower is particularly difficult. It's fun, but it's difficult. It doesn't take cold as well. It's not one of my favorites. I wouldn't take up a lot of space with it. I would grow a few so you get a feel for it. They need to be big plants when you put them in, and you need to put them in as soon as possible because they're funky that way. They don't like cold. They don't do as well as the broccolis we recommend. But just experiment with a few cauliflowers. Now, here's what I would recommend. Don't wait for the plant sale in late October if that's when the plant sale is, because you need to get them in now. So you need to find a nursery that's selling those plants now. That's good. Now, spacing. cauliflower doesn't like to be crowded, but I would say put them about 18 to 24 inches apart, somewhere in there. 18 to 24 inches apart should be great spacing for cauliflowers. What else were you going to grow, Bill?
Broccoli. I'm going to grow broccoli and collards and turnips.
Yeah. So broccoli is broccoli. You know, I'd put depending on the variety of broccoli and the broccoli varieties that you're going to get from most stores right now are going to be varieties like Green Comet or Lieutenant, I think they call it, or something else. But those varieties tend to need a little more space. I would space them about 18, 20 inches apart. Would be good spacing for them. And I often put them on diagonals. It's something, it's an old planting term for that, quincunx, which means that basically you make these sort of diagonal patterns so that each plant is at least 18 inches apart and some are a little farther apart. But it's like if you can think about making a diamond shape when you plant them. And that's a real efficient use of space, with 18 inches being the minimum dimension, and some of those will be more farther apart, but 18 inches on each side of that diamond is basically what you're looking for, and that's a great way to pack a lot of space, a lot of plants into a small space.
I can drive.
Does that make sense?
I got one more question.
Yes.
My okra plants are about done, so I'm fixing to pull those up in pretty soon, but. What I would like to do is cut the stems with those big green leaves and put them in my garden to make my compost in the garden itself. Would that be a good idea? They decompose real quick, I think.
Oh, sure, man. Yeah, absolutely. You know what I did last year? And it worked okay. Wasn't perfect, but it was okay. So what I did was I left the stalk, just to give you a sense that okra is kind of useful sometimes. I left the stalks on the biggest stalks and planted my spring peas underneath them so the peas would have something to climb on. Short peas, not tall peas. So I kind of used them as pea brush, as we used to say. But, yeah, I mean, okra is so great. It makes great brush for your gardens. It'll deteriorate. Everything is good. Everything organic is good for your garden. Any leaf, any stem ain't going to hurt the garden. You can just put it in there, it'll be fine. And you're not going to get you, it's great. Just cut it and leave it where it is if you want to.
I'll just do that because I need the space, and I hated to waste those big pine green leaves. I figured they would decompose real quick.
Oh, yeah, real fast. The stalks will take a little longer, but, you know, that's just fine. It'll cover the ground in winter. It'll deteriorate, and you can actually just pull the stalks apart and plant right in between them next spring if you like. And it'll be fine. It makes a great mulch.
Great. So where would I go to buy those plants that I need? I think the Botanical Gardens are going to be like the middle of October.
That's right. Well, we got to take a break, but let me come back and let's talk about that.
Okay.
Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Oh, man, I got a lot of questions to answer, but it's good. So let me run through them real quick. You can send me pictures, and I'll try to identify things. I do that a lot. It's kind of fun, kind of challenging. Like, we got that big caterpillar that's just bizarre. And then Dan got all excited because he found a picture of a hickory horn devil. Told you they were crazy. Wow. If anybody's got a picture of a hickory horn devil, here's my challenge. Or any other really cool-looking, super cool-looking caterpillar. post it to Facebook. So we got a Facebook page. You know, just look up FM Talk 106.5. That's kind of the way to get to us, no matter how you do it. And we got this Facebook page, and you can post on that Facebook page. Now, if you want me to answer your questions, don't post it there, because I won't see it till after the show. But you can post stuff there, and it's really great for our listeners to be able to see what it is. And it's a great way to share with our listeners, and they'll have fun. And you post a picture of a genuine hickory horn devil, and people are going to say, oh, my goodness. It's an amazing thing. You got to have them in your hands. You got to show them in your hands so you know how big they are. Right, Dan? Absolutely amazing, those hickory horn devils. But there's lots of cool caterpillars out there. Post them. You can post pretty pictures, too, on our Facebook site. Now, I'll tell you, we give rewards, awards, whatever you call them, if folks like your picture. Now, if you post a picture of a hickory horn devil, they may give you a reward just for not posting it again. But we give rewards. We give awards for posting the best picture on our Facebook page, FM Talk 106.5. Doesn't cost anything to enter that little competition. All you got to do is post your picture on Facebook. Meanwhile, if you've got, Leanna, did I do okay? So if you've got, thank you. If you've got other pictures you want me to identify right now, you just send them in. All you got to do is send them in from your phone. It's so easy. I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of your phones have this little camera on there. Did you notice that? I hope I helped you by telling you that. And you just take the picture and you text it to us. That's really easy to do. You can do it in the middle of the show. People do it all the time. Pinecone ginger. You know, just the folks who asked me about pinecone ginger, just plant them. They're fine. Everything is fine. Life is good. Plant your pinecone gingers now. Plant them now. Couple of notices from people. I want to address this, that the garlic is going to ship late this year. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, fires, weird climate, weird things happening all over, droughts, water issues. And the places where these garlics are grown, it's kind of scary for the people who have to deal with it. But they're shipping later because of these problems. For us, it's not a problem. I like planting garlic a little bit earlier. There's a couple of reasons why I do. You can harvest the greens a little bit easier. But, you know, from the perspective of bulbing garlic, plant them in November is as good a time as any to plant. Works out real well. It'll be just fine. So plant them in November. You'll be fine. They'll do fine. It will all be good. Nothing wrong with planting them in October. That's fine. November is, and in some small ways may be better, but November is a great time and kind of the classic time for planting most garlic in this climate. Let's see what else. So Bill, I'm coming back to Bill here in just a minute, but somebody said, did I forget grapefruit when I was talking about citrus to grow? And no, I didn't forget grapefruit. In fact, the whole time I was thinking about telling people which one to grow, I was thinking somebody's going to make me say grapefruit, and I'm not going to say grapefruit. And here's why I'm not going to say grapefruit. We don't do grapefruit as well as other places. We can do it okay, but it's not one of our tops. We do satsumas really, really well. We do, Louisiana sweets and other Gulf Coast designed citrus really well. We do kumquats really well. We do ponkans really well. We do Meyer's lemons really well. I don't think we do grapefruits as well. And I think if I had to pick for somebody who was just starting out, grapefruit would be the last thing I would recommend. Can somebody show me a grapefruit tree and say they've got one? You betcha. They're out there. I just don't think we do them as well. They're okay, and they can be a little not as hardy as some things. They can be a little tender, and I just don't recommend grapefruit as a top thing. So there it is. Yeah, if you just for a novelty, you can certainly grow it. And some people do a little better than making it a novelty, I will admit. But grapefruit don't ripen until February and March. This is a problem for us. We can talk about that. Bill, let's come back to your raised beds, because this gives me a chance to talk. And I thank you for holding on, because we had a lot of intervening stuff, and you were very kind to hold on. You still there?
Yes, sir. I've been listening to your radio the whole time.
Yeah, good. So great. I'm glad you're going to the broccoli and the cabbage and the cauliflower. That's all good. You want to get it in as soon as possible. And the reason is, Bill, the days are getting shorter. Our winters are not that cold, but our days get shorter. And in South Florida, where they grow this stuff over the winter, the days are longer than they are here. But our days are getting shorter, and as those days get shorter and the temperature gets a little colder, everything's going to slow down. And things like broccoli and broccoli and cauliflower, they all got to flower. They have to flower. Literally, that's what you're eating. So you've got to really get a lot of growing in before they're ready. And I just don't recommend planting after, say, that first or second week in October. So getting those plants as soon as possible. I don't know all the nurseries that are left. I will tell you, it's hard to figure out who's doing what. But A Bloom's still over there in West Mobile. I know they're still doing things. And there's a bunch in Baldwin County. Stokely's may have some plants. Most everybody's selling Bonnie's right now. They're all selling pretty much the same plants. But you might check with A Bloom, because they may have some varieties that other folks don't have. They've been good about trying to grow their own sometimes. I don't know if Shore Acres still is growing out vegetables. I don't know. But I would check around at some of the local nurseries, and I don't know all of them around Pascagoula, but I would look for some of the local nurseries. They're all probably going to be Bonnie's plants. And go ahead and purchase them and get them in the ground, because that's the most important thing right now. Next year, Bill, call me in August and say, okay, I want to get on top of this. Call me August, early August. I want to grow my own from seed. Tell me how to do it and tell me what seeds to buy.
Yeah.
And that way you ain't got to go scrambling. You ain't got to wait on anybody. You can do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, and then that's my thought. Listen to your show. You know what grows best in our area. What brand?
You know, I try, and I hadn't grown every brand. I will tell you, I hadn't grown every variety. I have a sense of which varieties are going to do better, and we can look at some things. I mean, one thing we don't want. We want varieties that are pretty winter hardy if we're going to grow broccoli, for example, because we want our broccoli to grow into the winter. In fact, I would say winter hardiness is more important than heat tolerance. I know that sounds weird, but winter hardiness is more important than heat tolerance for varieties we grow, because we're planting them now. The temperatures are – we don't have much heat between now and December, so it's not a heat problem. It's going to be – a cold problem when December gets here. But yeah, I got a sense sometimes.
Yeah, and
Bill, it's good to hear from you.
To buy those tomato plants that you recommended.
All right, good. Yeah, listen,
thank you.
You call me in January, Bill. Call me in January, and we're going to tell you how to grow your own tomatoes.
Great. That's what
How's
I want
that?
To do. I'll call you.
All right, call me in January. All right.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you.
Cucuzza Bella, she's my pizza pie with lots of mozzarella. With Cucuzza, I wanna be, 'cause Cucuzza is so crazy over me. Cucuzza grows in Italy, they love it on the farm.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Lots of things. Lots of pictures to look at. I'm gonna try to get to all of them while we got a chance. So let me dwell on some of these. Here's a picture that I got of a field, and it's really nice. It looks like a really good field. There is indeed some flat top goldenrod there. I think it's euthymia. The picture's a little small. But it's big enough for me to think, yeah, that's flat top goldenrod. You know, some of the goldenrods have, rather than having wand like flowers or plume like flowers, they have flat top flowers. Now, they're not true goldenrods in a way, but I think they're marginally closely related. They're kind of like halfway between a goldenrod and an aster, if that doesn't blow your mind. But flat-top goldenrods are out there a lot. So that's the one in the foreground is something else, and I ought to talk about it. It's a Lespedeza, L-E-S-P-E-D-E-Z-A. And there are a lot of great native Lespedezas out there. This is not one of them. This is called Sarisa Lespedeza, however people want to pronounce it. They got a bunch of different names for it. It is one of our invasives, and it can be a real problem. It's really aggressive. It can take over pastures. Not a good thing to keep. I can tell it's Sarisa Lespedeza because of how bushy it is. It's got a lot of stems coming from the base. I can't see the flowers closely, but I know they're white. They don't seem to be in clusters. They seem to be all up and down the stem. It's not capitata. It's not virginicus. It's not any of the great native Lespedezas. It is Sarisa Lespedeza. If you have a choice, and if that pasture is yours, you can pull it up because it ain't a good thing. It's not a good thing. I just, by the way, I'm going to do this. If folks are out there trying to get quail, please do not plant. Don't make the mistake, because I have seen it happen, and it is a huge mistake, of planting non-native Lespedezas for quail. We got plenty of native Lespedezas that quail love. The non-native Lespedezas destroy quail habitat. They destroy it, and I have seen it. I have seen quail plantations in the Talladega Mountains where they planted bicolor. And, I mean, it virtually eliminated any possibility of having a real quail population, and it is nearly impossible. Excuse me. It is nearly impossible for Lespedeza bicolor to get rid of it once you plant it. Those are the non-native Lespedezas. You've got Sarisa and bicolor. Cuneata. You can tell the Cuneata because the base will be much narrower than the top of the leaf. The base of that leaf will be shaped like a wedged cuneate, and the top will be a little bit broader than the base. It'd be widest right towards the tip. That's what you got in that picture. I got another picture, and from Bibb County, Clay. And Clay has sent me a picture of one of the great yellows, another great yellow. This one we haven't talked about as much on the show. It's called Crown Beard. It's also called Winged Stem. And Clay, if you still have access to that plant, if you run your hand along the stem, you'll see, you can feel on that stem, there's a little bit of a wing, and it's like a little flap of tissue that comes out from the stem that's called a wing, and it's on either side of the stem. Wing stem, it's called. Crown beard is another one. It's an interesting plant. It is very weedy, and it comes in a lot. I have heard... This is interesting, it may be true. And I've heard some folks at Auburn who talked to me about deer habitat saying we actually think we're seeing an increase in verbizot, this particular yellow, because deer don't like it, and so they eat out all my nice sunflowers, but they won't eat the verbizina, which is also nice, but not. in many ways as nice as the sunflowers. They won't eat it. And so we're getting a lot of this verbizina. It's okay. It's a nice plant. It's a beautiful plant. I made a mistake of planting it in my yard one time. And it's still there. I got to pull it up occasionally. There's some great verbizinas. There's some great wingstem crown beards, but that's what that one is. That is a crown beard. Clay, any more questions, you let me know. David Hubble says he's very proud of his Plain Gardening Award. David has many other things that he should be more proud of, and of course he is. But you can get a Plain Gardening reward for posting on Facebook. I'm just making Leanna happy. You can get this reward for posting on Facebook, and you could make our listeners happy by showing your pictures too. That'd be real nice. But David is saying, you know, in spite of the loopers, the male melaton are showing up on time. You know, most plants can survive a lot of damage. And I think plants like melaton, which have a long season, you know, I think they did most of their energy storage way back. And everything here, most of the energy storage now is kind of, I won't say it's superfluous, but it's just a little bit additive. And that's another way to think about it, is when you got these perennials, they can stand insect damage a lot better, particularly brief little spells of insect damage, because they got a lot of carbohydrates stored already from summer. So I think you're going to do fine. Now, the cabbage, these loopers, and they seem a little different to me, and I you almost got to be a looper expert to figure some of this stuff out. I used to have to figure out all the cotton boll worms and all that stuff, cotton bud worms. But these are different. And I don't know why, but they're out there a lot. We're seeing a lot of problems with them this year. I may try to find an insect expert who can help us if they've been paying attention. Somebody asked me about, because I love to talk about this, Philip in Fairhope, and so he's asking me about, he's got 2,500 to 4,500 square feet. Let me calculate that, about the size of range of a big house with filtered light. And he wants to try some of the native grasses. You know, here's what I think I would do there. Here's some great ones to start with. For a situation like that, I would certainly begin with Southeastern Wild Rye. Now, are you going to be able to find seeds for Southeastern Wild Rye? No. So what you need to do, I mean, this is not like there's an industry out there helping us to be Alabama. There's an industry out there that don't want us to be Alabama. They've been selling you junk from all over the world for as long as you can, since you were born. So we don't have a lot of people selling Southeastern Wild Rye, but that would be a great one. It's a beautiful plant, has really cool looking flowers. You would love it. It's beautiful. It is a cool season grass. It does reasonably well in a little bit of partial shade, which is what you got. It'd be a great thing to start with. There's another one that would do very well, and I think it would probably do well even in partial shade, and that's plume grasses, sugarcane plume grasses. If you're, and they have these big purple tops on them. Look up sugarcane plume grass. I mean, they are big and they are beautiful. Look up sugarcane plume grass right now, Philip, on the internet. A good place to get started. And so you can get an image of what that looks like, and then you're going to drive by a bunch of fields in Baldwin County, not where everybody's already made their mess, you know, where all the houses are, but up in some of the native parts of Baldwin County, you're going to see sugarcane plume grass. It's blooming right now. It's got these big, beautiful purple plumes. Unbelievable. The color of that, it's like a shiny purple metal. Really beautiful. Really beautiful. And that sugarcane plume grass, I hope it don't scare you when I say this, it'll be 10 feet tall. I mean, it's big and it's beautiful. And it is at, but you look at it, go take a look at it on the internet. And then I want you to go and look for it in the fields of Baldwin County. Take pictures of other grasses and ask me about them too that you see. And you can go back and collect the seeds on that sugarcane plume grass. Oh, I want to talk about it more, but I got to take a break. We'll be back.
And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-rutting that Tennessee stud. I had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw, and one of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I sent her a letter by my Uncle Foot, then I rode away on the Tennessee stud.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. A lot of fun questions. A lot of fun questions. I don't know where to start. Philip, let me start with you. Look this thing up. I want you to look at it. It's really cool. I talked Philip into sugarcane plume grass, folks. You don't know how happy that makes me. So look it up on the get a feel for it. The flower will be, you know, it could be 10 feet tall. It's amazing. And you'll probably see some in the fields that are about that tall. The leaves won't be that tall. They'll be waist high when they're ready to go. But the flower heads, it's just a beautiful, beautiful. I mean, you can call it an ornamental. I just like it. It's a great native grass. It's a grass that's underutilized. There's a bunch of them out there. Oh, Florida pest alum right now. I mean, you know, don't get me started. I get too wound up on grasses. We got great grasses. You know, we talk about centipede grass. Thank goodness we don't talk about that as much as we used to. Maybe people gave up on me. Maybe they gave up on centipede. That would be even better. But, you know, there's all these great native grasses, and they're not long grasses. I'll tell you. You know, the reason that's going to be next week's show. That's what we're going to talk about next week is why native grasses didn't make good long grasses. And we're going to talk about that. The one exception may be St. Augustine, but we'll talk about it. And it's very illuminating, even if as far as you can get is long grasses. That's the way it is. Somebody sent me a picture of another yellow flower. The yellow flower is everywhere. And, you know, I forgot to mention this one completely in my column the other day. I regret that I didn't. It's a great one. It's evening primrose. It's one of the evening primrose. It's Oenothera, related to that Ludwigia that Dan sent me earlier. A picture of Oenothera, evening primroses. The flowers uncurl at night. You know, it's funny, in summer you can almost see them pop. I mean, they open so fast, you almost think it's a pop. And they do it at dusk. Evening primrose is really cool. This time of year, they'll bloom during the day because the sunlight is so low. And it's funky and then interesting. So in September and October, you'll see all these Oenotheras, even our big one, Oenothera grandiflora, which William Bartram, when he saw it in Baldwin County for the first time, described it for the first time in Baldwin County when he stepped ashore in Stockton in 1776, seven, sometime in there. He said, it's the most pompous flower yet known. That's what he said about Oenothera. It is a big flower. Our native South Alabama Oenotheras are particularly large, really cool looking things. Evening primrose is what you got there. Let's see. What else am I missing? I think I didn't get to everybody. I'm going to be, I'm going to go back up. If I've missed you, you just prompt me. Here's a great picture from Ed from Foley of a big daylily that is yeller too. You know, a lot of folks like yeller. This reminds me, there is one question that was sent in. There are people who don't like yellow. My, or certain types of yellows. And, you know, I think they don't like them. They don't dislike them in nature so much, but I have a good friend who, a neighbor who said, you know, yellow reminds me of Big Bird. And there was something frightening about Big Bird as a child. And yes, I suppose that I understand that. I appreciate that completely. And if yellow reminds you of Big Bird, you just kind of have to get it out of your head. I appreciate that. But there are yellows out there that are not Big Bird yellow that are really nice. In fact, almost everything is not. Every natural yellow is not Big Bird yellow. Somehow, I think walls that are painted yellow can look more like Big Bird. Just thinking about yellow. You know, I think we were trained to, I think we learned to see yellow because yellow was important information. How is that? Let me put it that way. We see yellow because it's important information to us from a lot of perspectives. I think it's less important that we see the ultraviolet in the flowers because we're not pollinators. But they don't see yellow, but we see yellow. Interesting, isn't it? I'm still trying to figure all that out. What am I missing? Sean sent me a great picture of some goldenrod that he got from the botanical gardens. He asked me about his lion's ears, whether they're going to bloom, they're over 8 feet tall. I think you look like you're a little too much shade there. Sean, disabuse me of that notion, but it feels like you're in a lot of shade. Those plants like a lot of sun to bloom, but I think they may still bloom. They may still bloom. Bill, you got a great question. I am so ready for this question. Are you still there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Good.
Well, I have a designated area that I want to plant corn again. Oh, probably around February is what I did last year. And rather than let it sit there, I'm wondering if I've got time for a cover crop that I can just broadcast out there. That's my question. And what would crop be?
Yeah, here's a great one. And you're going to regret cutting it down in February, too, but it's good in the meantime. Fava beans.
Oh, you're kidding.
You could do oats. You could do fava beans. Fava beans is probably better for your situation.
Uh-huh.
It'll be easier to kill it out. It'll be easier to – it's just easier to get your corn planted. You can plant it right in between the fava beans if you need to. But fava beans are great. Now, I would recommend, you know, you could – there's a bunch of fava bean varieties out there. There's one called Diane that's actually used as a cover crop, and I've grown it before. Actually makes pretty good favas, but the favas are probably not going to make until later in the spring after you've planted your corn. But here's the great thing about fava beans. They make a great cover crop. They set nitrogen, so you'll probably have plenty of nitrogen ready for your corn. You won't even have to add a lot of nitrogen. They make a ton of foliage, and they'll get, you know, in Mobile over the winter until February, they'll be neck high. And so you can break all that down. Here's the other good thing. You can eat it. So you can you're not going to leave it in the ground long enough to eat the beans, which is too bad. You might have a little place where you save where you actually try to grow the beans, and I would try different varieties for the beans. But the foliage is delicious, and I use fava bean foliage all winter long. It is absolutely just take the tops out of it. It has this great bean-like flavor. You can use it in salads. You can use it in cooking. It's absolutely delicious.
Well, I have two quick questions. Number one is, where would be a source, other than buying those little packets, you know, at the big box stores, what would be a source where I could get like a bag of them? And then, I guess I got two. I imagine you can't really just broadcast them out there. And then the third question is, when I'm getting ready to plant corn, should I just drop everything in place and kind of chop it up into the soil?
Okay, let's get started. So the first place, here's what I would suggest. If you're going to use it as strictly as a cover crop and you need a lot of seeds, how big a space is this, Bill?
I would say about 60 or 70 feet by about 6 feet, 7 feet.
Yeah, so you can use it. You can use a few more. You might try Osborne seeds on the internet. Osborne quality seeds, Osborne. They are okay. They produce seeds for real farmers, and they you can get favas in large quantities. Not always the best. Not they don't have a huge variety, but they have one that is called Diana that I've used. It's a great cover crop fava, and you can get it in large volume.
Okay.
And that's probably your best bet because you need a good volume. You're not gonna I don't think you're gonna find that locally. And so go on the internet, Osborne quality seeds. The seeds are huge. I mean, these are huge seeds. I mean, they're bigger than lima beans for the most part.
Yeah.
So you gotta just, you know, they got a good hardy root system. If your soil is reasonably good, you can just go in and just pop them in the ground. It just push them in the ground, however you do it. If you got a seeder that can handle big seeds, you can seed them in that way. You can pull a trench, just a shallow trench that's, you know, with an edge of a hoe, for example, and then just pop them in, pop, 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 and then take your hoe going back over the row and just smooth it back over. They can stand to be buried a little deep, about as deep as they are tall, if you can see what I'm saying. And so that there's a little bit of soil, maybe an inch of soil over on top of them is great. So that's the way to plant them. Now, what are you going to do when you're ready to plant your corn? Because they'll still be growing vigorously. So at that point, yeah, I think you probably want to about 2 weeks before you plant your corn. You're just going to have to, and it's going to be hard because you're going to have fallen in love with these fava beans, but you're going to have to brace yourself. You're going to have to go out and you're going to have to cut them real short to the ground, or you're going to have to pull them up. I would, if possible, cut them real short to the ground, break them over and it will stop their growth. You can plant the corn right in it, but you want to have plenty of sunlight on that corn. So if you do break them, if you do cut them, sow the corn, let the corn come up in February, and then put the mulch back on the beds. Alternatively, here's another way of thinking about it. Just keep cutting them down. About every 3 weeks, go out and just cut the tops down. Take a few tops off to go in and cook with because they're really good, and then cut them back about halfway. Just keep doing that all through the winter, and then cut them really low, and you'll have developed plenty of mulch that will already have deteriorated. Just remember that your corn is going to want warm ground, so you don't want to mulch the ground, you see what I'm saying, in February because you want it to warm up.
Okay, that sounds great. Would I try the same thing for my potatoes?
Your potatoes, you're going to need to start early. Yes, you can. You can certainly try that with your potatoes. That's an interesting thought. Potatoes don't need as much warm ground. They just need protection from the winter. I think they would do even better with the potatoes. Yes. Depending on how you're going to grow your potatoes. But yes, I think they'd be great mulch for your potatoes too.
Sounds great. Thank you.
All right. Good to hear from you, Bill. Let me know how it goes.
I will.
Bye. All right. We're going to be back. We got a little bit of time. You better call quick.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
That's it. We're done. We're not done, but we're done with that. Clear it out. Oh, goodness gracious. We do that to ourselves. Somebody said that the webworms are coming in on the pecans. Usually see them earlier. And yeah, you do. You know, I don't think they're going to make that much difference right now. You could put a lot of effort into it, but I think the pecans have probably already pretty much Yeah, if they defoliate the tree a little bit, what does it matter? I mean, the pecans have pretty much done their thing with developing. A lot of those pecans are already developed. A lot of pecans are already starting to drop, getting real close. I don't think they're going to make that much difference. But, you know, as usual, you just take that bamboo pole, run it up there, twist it around. Really good. Great way of doing it. Oh, come on. There's sent me a picture, and the name of the plant is just right on the tip of my tongue, and it's not coming to me, but you send that picture to me, the small half-inch wide flower. It's going to come to me as soon as the show is over, as sure as I'm tooting. It's going to come to me. But you got to send it to me next week again, because I'm not thinking about it right now. Josh, I want you to bring your wife to the phone right now, and I want to say this to her. Yellow. I'm going to say it again. Yellow. We can talk. We can talk right when we want to here in the South. But, you know, if you grew up watching Old Yeller, you just got to say Yeller sometime in your life, right? Yella. Yella is probably the classic Southern way of saying it. Yeller is more of an Appalachian way of saying it. Yella is because we don't, it's just that typical Southern schwa, to be precise about it. Yellow. We can do that too. As in, they call me Mellow, Yellow. We can do all those things if we have to. There's just a lot of different yellas and a lot of different ways of saying yella. It's okay. It's all right. It's all right. What have we got left? So, you know, cover crops are an interesting thing that I ought to, maybe we can finish the show out with. And we did talk about it. It is interesting not to leave beds. Don't leave beds during the winter if you can. Ryegrass is fine. A lot of people do ryegrass, and it's a fine thing. It's hard to get it winter. It's hard to get it killed when you're ready to plant. So you've got, it still wants to grow. It's an annual if you plant the right one. But when you're ready to plant, it still wants to grow. I guess if I were going to planting ryegrass, I would plant it in places where I was going to plant okra or field peas or something that starts late. That would be a great place. I would not start ryegrass where I want to grow tomatoes. One thing you can try is oats. And a lot of years, oats will winter kill, particularly north of Mobile, but it may not winter kill reliably in Mobile even. But you can break oats. You can break it by pushing it, by cutting it very close to the ground or pushing it down close to the ground and breaking those stems. They won't resprout in many cases, and that's a great way to do. Barley is another great winter cover crop, and I'm playing with it. You know, I think it might not do as well in South Alabama as in North Alabama, but it's a cool plant that we tend to forget. Oats will do much better in most of South Alabama than it will in North Alabama because it's less winter hardy, but it is it likes moisture. It is very tolerant of moisture, really cool plant. And for those of you who are into really cool things, some of those oats come with, they're hullless. They don't have hulls, and true for some of the barleys too, which means that you don't have to have special equipment to process them. You can use them yourself. Fun to play with. Hullless oats, hullless barley. If you got barley with hulls on it, it's great for making beer. But there's a lot of cool oats and barleys out there. There's another thing that I really like, and I don't think we've dealt with it enough, and that's Southeastern wild rye. And it's a really pretty thing. If you can find seeds for it, which you're probably going to have to collect yourself, I do. It's out there a lot. It's really beautiful seed heads, kind of classic seed head. Looks almost like a big head of wheat or rye, but it's native. And really kind of showy, and it's a cool plant. We have not meddled with it enough. I suspect it would make a really great grain if we were thinking about it and working on it. And I know some people have begun to play with that with the Canadian wild rye, but southeastern wild rye, beautiful thing, great, potentially a great cover crop for some situations, and in some areas. So it's a fun thing with all of this winter coming up. It's time to plant, time to get your stuff in the ground. Don't wait. You really need to have your plants in the ground now. And I want to be nice to everybody and everything and say, oh, yeah, just wait till November. But I can tell you, if you wait until November to plant, you're not getting any produce during the winter at all. You're going to get it next spring. You've got to plant now. Now is the time for your broccoli, for your cabbage, for your cauliflower. You'll regret it. But dry the cauliflower just so you can get it out of your system. The collards, the kales, the parsleys for sure. You definitely want to get those parsleys out now. Cilantros, there's great flowers to get out. If you can find some snapdragons, put them out, man. Put them out. They deserve to be out this day. They'll do great. The sweet williams, most of them will do really good. Some of them get some foliar diseases, but a lot of the great sweet williams are really good. The dianthus, this is the time of year for them. This is time to have fun because the insect pressure is going to become less. The colors are going to intensify. The sweetness in your greens is going to intensify. It's going to be great fun, but you got to do it now. You can't wait until next week or the next week or the next week or the next week to plant because the days are getting shorter. The light is getting lower, and it is absolutely beautiful. And you know what that light shows me? There's yellow everywhere. Yellow, yellow, yellow everywhere. There it is. Time to understand yellow. Beautiful thing out in our environment. It's what our show's been about. I think we evolved to see yellow. That's kind of what I wanted to say in this show, and that means that there's something special this yellow is trying to tell us. Don't mow it down. Go out and enjoy it. Go out and find some, you know, here's the other thing. Go out and find some beautiful sugarcane plume grass. You look it up on the internet and tell me if that ain't the most, you think it's pretty on the internet? You ought to see it in life. It is one of the most stunning things, one of the great things out there. Sugarcane plume grass, beautiful golden rods. We're going to be back next week.
Traveling through.
Thank you.
This world alone. There is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair.